Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. We are wrapping up our final round of interviews with Democratic gubernatorial candidates before this weekend's convention in Worcester. Joining us today in studio is the Attorney General of the Commonwealth. She would be Martha Coakley. Hello, Attorney General.
Good afternoon.
So, Attorney General Martha Coakley, before we get to the campaign, there is a bit of news today that I want your reaction to, because people don't know this. You were for many years a prosecutor in Middlesex County. The district attorney in Middlesex County did a lot of sex offender work, child abuse work. The Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts just today ruled that lifetime parole for sex offenders violates the state's constitution and ordered an end to this parole board oversight of offenders who finish their sentences, which basically means they finish their sentences, they're out on their own. And many people think that sex offenders are never cured, if that's the right verb to use. What's your reaction to what the SJC did?
I actually just heard that, Marjorie, coming in. I have not had a chance to read the decision. I just have the top lines on it. At least it seems to me, from the little bit I know, is it's saying you can't take from the judges to the legislature. You can't take something and make it automatic like this, where it belongs to the judges to do. So I think judges can impose, as they do in other instances. But I don't know. I have to look at the decision and see what it actually means, whether it's gone for good or whether the judges have discretion to do it. Look, we struggle with this issue, and I think the court struggles with the issue also, about how do we protect people's rights on the one hand, and how do we protect kids and others from people who are sexual offenders. And this idea of people who are sexual predators is really different. We dealt with it for a long time, of people who abuse children. They're different from bank robbers, frankly. And trying to get this so that it's fair has been very difficult. And we've had a lot of these decisions by the legislature that then get overturned, whether it is around the way we do, you know, the announcing of people who are sex offenders, the way we list them. And I think we're going to continue to see this struggle, particularly with a recent case in the news, to keep people safe, but also to protect people's individual rights.
Okay, well, that was the breaking news for today. Let's get back to the convention, which is coming up this weekend. We had State Treasurer Steve Grossman in here, I think it was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
And you are way ahead of him in the polls. But he has said that if you don't, if you're rejected up in the convention this weekend by the party insiders, the people that know you best, if he gets a big win or you don't get a big win, that you need to do some quote-unquote soul-searching. Do you have to do some soul-searching if things don't go well this weekend, Attorney General?
Certainly I'm not worried about being rejected. You know, I have always looked at this convention, and this was true, you know, running for Attorney General. I look forward to going to conventions because you need to get your 15% to get on the ballot. The purpose of the convention is to get people excited. Look, we did our caucuses. We get people organized around candidates, around ideas. Get people elected. We still have a lot of uncommitted delegates, and people get elected to go for somebody. They change their mind. They, you know, this is a very fluid process. It's an exciting one. And we're looking forward to Saturday so that we will have our 15%. We will get people excited. We'll talk to delegates. At 15% is a win. And that's what I'm focused on. I'm really, you know, what really counts is what happens on primary day in September.
But isn't there some legitimacy to the notion you are crushing all the Democrats in the polls? These are the people, you know, the rhetoric, who know you best. They're Democratic Party activists. They're people who are most engaged in politics. If the clear frontrunner doesn't leave Saturday as the frontrunner of her fellow Democrats at the convention, that does make some sort of statement, does it not, Martha Coakley?
Jim, you know better than that.
Why not?
Because, first of all, we've got folks, some of the folks going to the convention have gone for the last 20 years. So, yes, they are involved in politics and they are insiders. We have a lot of people who ran, and rightfully so, because they wanted to support Julia Kayyem or they wanted to support Don Berwick. The ways in which people come to go to the convention are very different. And it's different from looking at the general population. And so I think that the convention is a great thing. And it was great. We have five terrific candidates running for governor. Everybody is smart. They're interested. We've all learned from each other in this, by the way. And I think everybody is a much better candidate. The convention is about the rules that aren't going to change at this stage. Have you been able to organize with your ideas and your organization? Have you been able to get 15% both to get people to that convention and to vote for you when they're there?
What's the most important thing you've learned from any of the four of your opponents?
During the course of this, both Julia Kayyem and Don Berwick bring perspectives from their experience, as does Joe Avalon. We have two doctors running for governor.
Yeah.
How cool is that? And so we have all learned, I think, from their perspective, the way they look at issues, the way they talk about them. That's different from the way I have as a lawyer. or in my life. And I think the discussions we've had, particularly around energy and business and how we are going to be a more prosperous and fair commonwealth, what I'm interested in, I think has been really good. I think it's brought the level of debate up a lot.
Now, speaking of debates, there was a Boston Herald debate yesterday, a fetching picture on the front page of the Herald today with all five of the candidates. Joe Avalon took a selfie of all of you. It came out, that wasn't the selfie that ran, it was another picture, but did you get a chance to take a selfie, or was it just Joe Avalon that did the selfies?
Joe actually took the phone from me saying, "You're good at a lot of things, Martha, but I know how to do this better." And I let him do it. So it was a good picture.
Martha Coakley, you have taken some heat from people on both sides of should the casino law exist in Massachusetts. As Attorney General, you determined that the question as proposed, which would repeal the casino law, violated the Constitution, Article 48, and shouldn't be on the ballot. It's challenged. It's front of the Supreme Judicial Court. I don't want to get into the legal arguments there. I want to get into your position on the question itself. Should it be on the ballot in November? You will not vote for repeal, correct?
I have said I will not vote for repeal.
Are you not concerned? We've talked a lot about this in the last couple of days. $5 billion spent every year, gambled every year on the lottery, more per capita than any state in the country. And we've read a lot recently about the inequity of both the collection and the distribution. On top of that, three casinos plus maybe a Native American casino and a slots parlor. Do you worry about what at least seems to me to be a growing reliance, if not over-reliance, on gambling dollars, mostly coming from lower-income people, to support the things you believe in government? Isn't that troubling to you or no?
Well, of course I worry about that. And it's one of the reasons I took the position I did when the legislature voted to put this in, to say, hey, we need a money laundering statute. We need to put in money for the addiction issues that we know we're going to see. We need to know, we have to mitigate the ways in which this gets handled in the state. And particularly, it's why I'm against internet gaming. I think that that is not a good way to go. It's why I've stood up against the companies that have come in and tried to foreclose on people who've gotten into gaming debts. I mean, there are protections that we can put around what we do. I've said it's not the first place I would go for economic development. That was a decision by the legislature. So my role in trying to say, let's make it as safe as possible, let's mitigate those damages. And interestingly, I think the statute's working the way it's supposed to.
Deval Patrick championed this, and it surprised a lot of liberal supporters of his. Had you been, let's assume it wasn't a law, and you become governor in January, and there was a proposal out of the legislature to have three casinos and a slots parlor in Massachusetts, would it have your support?
No, because I have said that's not where I would go for economic development. And I appreciate even then that's not where I've gone first. I think now we've got other opportunities for economic development.
But if it turns out, the likelihood is quite good. Even if they award the Western Mass Casino to Springfield, I think the operator there has pretty much said, we're not going to move ahead. And I'm paraphrasing terribly much with this ballot question pending. So maybe we end up with a slots parlor. If you don't think it's the best choice for economic development, and most people think it does change the culture of a state, why would you not say, frankly, I'm going to vote for repeal. I hope people repeal it. And come January, you're going to hear a lot of new economic development plans that are far better for the Commonwealth than gambling is.
Well, first of all, it's one thing to say we're going to have one casino, which Springfield wants. You know, we gave areas an opportunity to make that determination. They've made that determination. We've gone down that road. You do what you can to mitigate it. But I also think the legislature and people overwhelmingly wanted this back then. And the statute gave local control. And the SJC will decide soon. I'm not personally against it being on the ballot. We just made a call, as we always do on these, like a trial court does. And then we knew it would go to the Supreme Judicial Court. I don't know what they're going to decide. I will be happy with whatever they decide. If it goes to the ballot, great. If it doesn't, then the court will have decided that it shouldn't be on a ballot. That's all that is about.
We're talking with Attorney General Martha Coakley, who is running for governor of the Democratic side. We had Steve Grossman, state treasurer, in with us yesterday, and we asked him the same question. So I'll ask you. You know, there's been a lot of problems in recent months with the Patrick administration, the Department of Children and Families, the health connector is still not running the way it was. I think Grossman called the medical marijuana rollout a fiasco. We asked him how he would grade Deval Patrick. How would you grade the 8 years of Deval Patrick's governorship?
Not just on those issues, but
in
on,
general.
On overall.
I'm just citing. Overall.
Yeah.
I'm just citing some of the messes.
Look,
the
in
last...
8 years, the governor has an enormous amount of responsibility. I think overall, Governor Patrick, in a very tough economy, he came in as I did when we were hoping to promote a healthy economy, and Wall Street had other ideas, you know, crashed it. We lost our pension money. We lost our homes. Our cities and towns have been trying to dig out of the loss of income from real estate taxes. Houses foreclosed, lost their value. So I think that the governor, in moving ahead on investments in education and what he's been able to do in the green communities, has been extraordinary. And I think the state is on the right track. We've got to fix some things, which we'll talk about in a second, I'm sure. But I think overall he gets a very good grade for inspiring confidence, working not always perfectly with the legislature, but no governor does, I will say that. And I think he's left Massachusetts much better off than he found it, and particularly given what's happened with the economy, given Wall Street's gambling with our money.
So what's that? A minus, B plus, B?
I'm A minus.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about the things you just suggested we might talk about in a minute. In the last year, he's had to deal with a crisis at the Department of Children and Families, the rollout of the medical marijuana dispensaries, which has been, I think, rocky to say the
least. I agree with that. I've been critical of that rollout.
So, and what do you think about the whole set of management decisions, for lack of a better expression, or management that Deval Patrick has exhibited over the last year in office?
Well, we do have to put them in perspective with, you know, a big state government, a lot of issues. Let's talk about DCF first. This is not a new issue. I have worked for a long time in child issues and with teams around child abuse since I worked in the child abuse unit. And under every governor, Democrat, Republican, I'd hear commissioners say, we have two problems. We leave kids in and we take them out. And we never funded enough. It's been cut. We in a tough budget time when we don't have enough money to go around after this recession, we're struggling for every dollar. So you've got caseloads that are too big, folks that don't get enough supervision. Asking young people particularly to go into a very complicated situation in a family and say, we want you to keep this family together, but keep the kids safe too. That's an impossible mandate in many instances. And we've seen what happens when you ask people to do impossible things. So I have proposed, and I think this makes sense, you have a division of children and families. Within it, you have a protective division for children when kids are deemed to be or potentially to be at risk of physical, sexual, or serious emotional abuse. You have somebody who follows the kid. You have teams that work on, do they stay in the house, do they have to come out? And I guarantee you, if we can do that, we'll get better results for kids like a Jeremiah Oliver or other kids that we will pay attention to. Can they be safely at home? When can they be reunited with their families, if at all? And if they can't, how do we keep them safe?
Let's talk about the legislature for a couple of minutes. We talked to Brian McGroy out of the Globe earlier today about the fact that my concern is that virtually none of the public are paying attention to what I consider to be a hugely important trial, the probation department scandal. You prosecuted John O'Brien. Mm-hmm. He was acquitted in that case. Now the feds are prosecuting him. The paper reports this morning, and this is not news, that you made some recommendations, sort of staff people, to the probation department. The defense argument here is, and I'll give the shorthand, is this is business as usual. No laws were broken. People recommend friends. They recommend allies, that sort of thing. Is it business as usual, and is it criminal?
Well, first, that's the jury's decision, Jim, and I feel strongly about that. I mean, this is a case that obviously the federal government, the U.S. Attorney's Office, felt they had enough evidence. They have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this is not business as usual, that this was a crime, and that they have to show the elements of that. Look, I am proud of, I've recommended three young women who wanted to go into law enforcement. They were qualified candidates. I was happy to recommend them. I would always do that. But the question before this jury is, was this something different? And, you know, this is a difficult trial, a complicated trial, because it involves years and all kinds of testimony, some of which the jury has to say, is this credible or not? So I'm going to wait for the jury verdict.
Well, one thing that hasn't been in dispute for, I mean, the jury does have to determine, but there's been very little contradiction here. A woman who has endorsed you, Terry Murray, the Senate president, there's been testimony from a number of people about one recommendation in particular, the son of a judge who was a friend of hers, who was deemed, quote, woefully underqualified by one of the judges on the hiring panel, was a heroin addict, fired 2 years after he was hired for heroin possession, this Lawton character. What was your reaction when you read about that? Is that business as usual? Is that acceptable conduct?
Well, the question has to be asked on the people who hired the person, what the reasoning was, and that's at the crux of this trial. What is the reason that the people who are doing the hiring, if that is all true, and I don't know whether it is or not, assume it's true, what was their reasoning? And that's what this trial is about. Look, we all get asked, and you guys also have been asked, friends of neighbors, you know, can we get an internship at the radio station where you work? Can we go here? You guys say, we've never done that. We've never recommended. Look, I'm not saying that we always should be looking to qualifications, but we work on the relationships that we build. And the idea is that we have now changed it. We have strict laws about how we do it. It should be more transparent. That has all changed since this, which is one good thing to come out of it. And so this is what's before this jury.
But when you hear, I understand the ultimate hiring and the jury has to determine why and did it break the law. When you hear one legislator's advancing the cause of a heroin addict, another legislator is advancing the cause of his 21-year-old girlfriend has no qualification.
I can say unequivocally right now, if someone asked me to get a job for a heroin addict, I would say, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And this is in the probation department. You know what I'm saying? It's not just an internship at a radio station.
Aren't you guys the ones against minimum mandatory sentences? And you think, you know,
some of us are.
Some of you are. Exactly. So let's talk about, you know, how we try and be fair to people and how we try.
Yeah.
I'm not, in this instance, I have no personal knowledge of that circumstance. So I am just saying you guys are assuming that all of those facts are true and that now all of a sudden somebody who maybe had a problem or whatever should never get a recommendation for something. I don't know if that's the case or not. But until you know the facts, until you know what went on here and why somebody was hired, people are still going to try and help people get jobs and do things. There's not anything wrong with that unless there is something wrong with it, and that's what this jury has to decide.
Speaking of wrong with it, you urge the I don't know if you did this as an individual or as the attorney general. You urge the Securities and Exchange Commission to look into the whole Charlie Baker relationship. He makes a personal donation to a key committee controlled by Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey. Then the pension fund in New Jersey, also arguably controlled by Chris Christie, invests millions of dollars in the parent company of one of the organizations that Charlie Baker is intimately involved in. Do you think he violated the law in his behavior?
What I did say, Jim, was that when I asked about it, I said it raises concerns that any organization, whether it's the SEC or the state of New Jersey, the people who oversee that, to me, it raises enough concerns that they should take a look at it.
And end of sentence. So you're not venturing an opinion.
I can't draw those conclusions yet, but it certainly this is what it raises red flags. It raises concerns.
We only have a minute left. The question that everybody wants to know, Martha Kolick, is why haven't you campaigned in months? I mean, that is the why have you decided to sit home in your house with your dogs and your husband? Why do you not campaign?
I've been home in my house eating chocolates.
Yeah.
Actually, my dog ate all my Valentine's Day chocolates. You know,
That's not good.
We had to bring him to the vet. No, he jumped and ate all my chocolates.
That's not the question everybody wants to know.
What is it?
You got caught in a flap, Martha Coakley. You got caught in a flap. You were parking in tow zones and fire department spaces when you were going to fundraisers. And people get very upset about parking spaces. So I want to know, have you cleaned up your act? Are you still parking in these illegal spots?
I wish you could see the smile on Martha Coakley's face. I don't know how to interpret it. Go ahead, Attorney General.
Look, as the governor does, as attorneys general have, we have state police executive protection. They make those determinations about the placement of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And all I will say is that you can call it a flap if you want, but the state police made that call, and that's the.
So is the state police guy in the car at the time that you're at the fundraiser, so that he can leave in an emergency?
It was not an emergency lane. It was a parking place for firefighters to
right.
park, and they had gotten permission to park there, no more, no less, and so.
It's not a fire lane.
It was not a fire lane, and
that's where Jim Browdy parks.
It will be called a fire lane forever and ever. But this is where facts make a difference. But the point is that I know this is going to continue. I've had trackers following me since September.
Yeah.
I got two trackers following me all the time. They're welcome to do that. I appreciate it. They show how hard I've been campaigning. To Jim's point, I will show you my schedule. I will put it up against anybody in this race. Nobody has knocked more doors or walked more miles or shake more hands.
Yeah, but
than
Martha
I have
Coakley. Okay, so you're campaigning like crazy. Before we let you go, I'm going to give you a little campaign advice. Do you need a little advice? Sure, Jim. Give me a little advice.
Should I take campaign advice from Jim?
I walk in.
I don't know.
I walk in
during the break to say hello, Martha Coakley, and to her colleagues. What do you say? I'm a voter in Massachusetts. I don't know if you're aware of this. What do you say to me, Martha? I'll tell you what she says. God, you look horrible, Jim. What is that? That's not the way to win votes, Martha Coakley.
I said, because I was listening to your prior segment. Yes. I said, have you not been taking your vitamins,
okay,
Jim?
Okay, well, that's exactly
you don't look so good.
Okay, you know, and this is discouraging to him because every day he brings in little Tupperware containers of, like, carrot sticks and asparagus sprouts and so forth to lose all the weight he's lost.
Nothing like a good asparagus sprout. Good luck to you Saturday, Attorney General Martha Coakley.
Thanks very much
for your
we'll
time.
Look forward to coming back with your new extra hour. You'll be looking for
guests.
Thank you so much.
We are.
That's right.
Good to see you, Martha.
That's right. High and low will be looking for a guest. Attorney General Martha Coakley is running for governor on the Democratic ticket. Thanks again, Martha Coakley, for coming in. When we come back, it is our concert roundup. We've got you covered. Jazz, classical, and some funky shows that Edgar B. Hoard III is highlighting. That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.